Everyone, we now commence our monthly board meeting. So let us all stand and we will start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, where we live today, which stands one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Amen. Okay. May we have a roll call, please?
Good evening, Commissioners. I'll take the roll call. Chair Hartwig?
Present.
Vice Chair Hurd?
Present.
Commissioner Castillo?
Present.
Commissioner Griggs Murphy?
Present.
Commissioner Montgomery?
Present.
Commissioner Griffiths?
Present.
Commissioner Jung Lee?
Present.
Thank you.
Cool. All right. Then do we have a motion to approve last month's minutes, please?
So moved.
So moved.
Second.
And seconded. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And one abstention.
Any opposed? Abstention. One abstention. Okay. Moving on to item four. Old or unfinished budget about business. We have our budget.
We do. Good evening, yeah. Commissioners. We have consideration of a resolution approving the Oakland Housing Authority comprehensive budget, public housing program budgets, and staffing plan for fiscal year ending June 30th, 2020, and HUD certification. As you are all aware, we had a very long and interesting meeting in May where we reviewed the various aspects of the budget. And I personally just want to thank not only the finance department, with Victor and his team, and I don't know if Albert, yes, Albert's here, Vicky's here. They did a wonderful job this year. And also each one of the directors and departments who put together the presentations. It was, I thought, a really, really terrific and educational evening, and I hope you agree. And I want to thank them for their work on the budget. This is, as the chair has pointed out, is the budget we go over $1 billion a year in assistance for 41,000 families in Northern California and 16,000 families in the city of Oakland. And I think that that's frightening to me to think how much rent has gone up that is driving that number. And I think it's a testament to lack of affordability more than it is any one individual in OHA's skill set. But I do appreciate the fact that we get those kind of resources for families in not only Oakland, but Northern California.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And we're here for any questions.
So do we have a motion?
No questions?
I'll we make can ask questions as well.
Chair, I'll make the motion to approve if there's no questions.
Okay. It's been moved.
A second.
And seconded. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? We have ourselves a budget.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Okay, so we are now moving on to new business, starting with item A.
Item A is one of my favorite annual items. It's about recognizing some of our youth who've
Yeah, wait, it was just pointed out that I jumped over modifications to the agenda. However, I believe there are none, which is probably why I jumped over it. Are there any? No. Okay. All right. Good.
Moving on to item 6-1. And item 6-1 is actually a presentation of the 2019 Public Housing Authority Director Association scholarship applicants and some recognition. And to do that, I first want to call up the Director of Family and Community Partnerships, Lenita Wheeler, who will give us further introductions and do some presentations.
Good evening, Commissioners. Lenita Wheeler, Director of Family and Community Partnerships. I am pleased to share with you all this evening about our FADA Scholars, the Public Housing Authority Directors Association. Each year, we send out notification to all of our students who are potentially eligible, 16 through 18-year-olds, letting them know of the opportunity. The requirements for them to be eligible is that they must be a Public Housing Authority resident, they must be in high school seeking to enroll into college, and they also must have a minimum 3.0 grade point average. We hold essay and application support sessions at both of our public housing sites at Lockwood Gardens as well as Peralta Village. And we also support the families with any other application materials or supports. These essays and scholarship applications serve as a foundation for other applications for scholarship that they can use to apply for college as well, which is why we host those support sessions. I'd like to now introduce the FCP education team. They will come up and share with you about the young individuals who applied. We had 5 applicants this year. 3 of them are here with us this evening. They have very busy schedules and calendars, and they will be sharing with you. However, before I bring up our team, we know that it takes a village to support our young people and encourage them. And before we have them come up, I'd like to acknowledge the family members and the loved ones who are here also supporting them this evening. We also want to congratulate them for their efforts as well, as we know you've worked very hard to ensure that your students got through high school and are on their way to college. So if you all wouldn't mind standing so we could acknowledge you as well. Thank you. We've got a shy group. Also, if you all wouldn't mind, each year we've been taking pictures with you all and with our FADA scholars. And as our team calls their names, it would be amazing if you all wouldn't mind stepping down and making the normal sort of U formation. And Greer McVeigh is here to take photos that we can share with our applicants and families later. So I'd now like to bring up Sonia Wright, Jonathan Leung, and Kim Shipp, our education team. Their fearless leader is Nicole Thompson in the back, assistant director. They will be introducing you all to our scholars, reading their bios, and they'll share with you what they're receiving tonight. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, good evening. I'd like to first recognize Julie Hopkins, who we selected to represent Oakland Housing Authority. She graduated Oakland School of the Arts with a 3.9 GPA and will be attending Clark Atlanta in the fall. She hopes to pursue history, early childhood education, and creative writing, and her accolades include National Honor Society, African American Honor for 4 years, Open Poet Laureate finalist, and Outstanding Theater Award. She is going home with a Chromebook.
Wow.
Wow.
Ooh. Cool.
Sure. Secondly, I'd like to recognize Ji Aju. She is not present tonight. She's out of the country. She was the second person selected to represent Oakland Housing Authority. She graduated Oakland High School with a 4.0 GPA. She'll be attending UC Berkeley in the fall and hopes to pursue neuroscience as her major. Her accolades include National Honor Society, Public Academy Honor Roll, Principal's Honor Roll, recognized 4.0 plus GPA for 9th, 10th, and 11th grade.
Beautiful.
Next, I'd like to recognize Desiree Carter. She graduated Coliseum College Prep Academy with a 3.49 GPA. She will be attending Son-in-Law State this fall and hopes to pursue biology. Her accolades include African American Achievement from 2014 to 2018, being part of the Black Student Union, and receiving the Build On Presidential Commendation. Next, I'd like to recognize Jason Chu. He is not present here today. He is graduating Oakland High School with a 3.9 GPA. He will be attending Cal Poly San Luis Obispo State this fall and hopes to pursue business and computer science. His accolades include the President's Volunteer Service Award, Principal's Honor Roll, second place at the PTLW Book Award. And lastly, I'd like to recognize Kaisi Nu. She's graduated from Oakland Technical High School with a 4.15 GPA. She will be attending the University of Southern California this fall, and where she hopes to pursue communications or business. Her accolades include being on the Oakland Tech's Honor Roll, being a member of the Interact Club, and a Questbridge National College match finalist.
Okay. Yeah. Did you want us yet? You ready for us too?
You ready for us?
Yeah. Yes, please. If you all wouldn't mind coming down for the photo, thank you.
Oh, thank you.
After all, it's Piedmont. Okay. Okay, well, those were some inspiring and impressive accomplishments. So thanks to everyone who was in any way involved with that, because that was really wonderful. So now we're moving on to item B.
Item B is consideration of a resolution authorizing the executive director to increase the contract with the City of Oakland to provide sponsor-based housing assistance program for an amount not to exceed $2,020,000 per option term. And this is amending a contract that we did last year to account for some inflation. And I've asked Michelle Hassan to come up and give us a brief overview of the status of the program.
Good evening, Commissioners. Michelle Hassan, Director of Leased Housing. Before I get started, I do want to acknowledge some guests in the audience. From the City of Oakland, I have Maisha Stewart, the acting planner for the Human Resources Department, and Laura Tenenbaum, the manager of the Community Housing Services of the Human Services Department. And really, to let you know, this program wouldn't work without the two of them.
Yeah.
And then additionally, before I start, I do want to acknowledge Lenita Wheeler, the Director of Family and Community Partnerships. Lenita took this program for a number of years. She really shaped it and molded it and assisted in creating our relationship and supporting the families who were coming on the program. Leased Housing took this over in November 2018, and the work that Ms. Wheeler did is just, it was phenomenal. So I do want to acknowledge Lenita's work on this.
Thank you. Very good.
So let me go over the program description. Basically, this is our first MTW local program. It was developed in 2010. Again, coming out of some discussions with our board members of what they wanted to focus on. It is in partnership with the City of Oakland. We provide rental assistance to homeless individuals living in encampments, homeless individuals exiting the criminal justice system, including youth. And individuals must be receiving services from providers that are currently under contract with the City of Oakland. Just to give you a history of our funding, I went back to 2018. We funded the program at $1.9 million. In fiscal 19, we increased that funding to $2 million. And in fiscal year 20 and for the three option terms, an additional $20,000 is being requested. The city receives no administrative funding from OHA. We do fund the service providers directly for housing costs, subsidy costs, security deposits, monthly utility payments, repairs and cleaning, vacancy loss on master lease units, and housing placement services. The city funds services match at $1,031,688. So the eligibility of participants, they're referred by an approved service provider. They can be currently homeless and living in encampments or exiting the criminal justice system. Their incomes must be below 50% of AMI, which is the Section 8 level. They are prohibited if convicted for the production of manufacture of methamphetamines on public housing sites or subject to a lifetime registration requirement. And they must have eligible immigration status. So this program was built to have less barriers for applicants. They do not get the full screening that we would do for our other program participants that are coming on the traditional Section 8 program. So really, the main background screening that we're doing is for lifetime sex registrant.
Okay.
For fiscal year 19, I'm happy to report that we have paid 98% of the funding that was approved for fiscal year 19. We have, actually, I could say, as of today, that as of May 31st, all invoices have been received by the Housing Authority. So we expect to fully utilize all of the dollars that you all have approved for fiscal year 19. I think the performance of this program has been very positive. 100% of the households have been housed for more than 6 months. 100% of households placed have been housed for a year or more. And 95% of households placed have been housed for more than 3 years. It's interesting to note that 95% have some form of income. Yes. So while they may have not come on the program with income, our partners are working closely with them. Ooh. That could be individuals applying for their SSI, TANF, income in terms of job placement as well. As of May 31st, we have stepped down from sponsor-based into the voucher program 18 individuals. And 10 more individuals are in some type of screening to move from sponsor-based to step down. So that was one of the components that was added in 2017, and we have successfully moved 18 individuals over to the voucher program. So who are our community partners? Of course, we have the City of Oakland Human Services Department, Abode Services, Lifelong Medical Care, First Place for Youth, St. Mary's Center, Operation Dignity, East Oakland Community Project. There may be more. It does take a community to support a program such as this one. So I want to talk a little about our successes and our challenges. Certainly one of the successes has been the ability to step down to HCV for those that were able to achieve some kind of economic stability and requiring less case management. Again, 18 individuals have done that. I think one of the success is really how the city has put in place a safe environment and productive environment for the partners in OHA and the city to actually meet monthly. So we're sitting at the table, we're talking about concerns about it could be an individual program participant, it could be someone coming on the program, but those meetings are in collaboration with the city and are facilitated by the city. I would say that a very positive aspect is the timing of our invoices by the city and payment by OHA. They are meeting their requirements in terms of billing us and providing us the documentation we need to be able to utilize the funds by the end of the fiscal year. So the challenges are, of course, high rents and limited inventory in terms of getting individuals to finding units for families to lease. Some landlords have been unwilling to participate in the HCV program in terms of the step down. So those individuals who are stepping down have to go out and find another unit. They're not able to lease in place to continue on with the HCV program, which of course is a challenge for our individuals and does require some additional funds.
So Michelle, what is it that causes that? Is that the landlord just says, wow, we're not getting enough government subsidy and I'm nervous? Or what is driving that?
So what I, Abode has shared with us some of the challenges that the owners have stated. You know, currently the owners have much more flexibility. They don't have a HAP contract. So in their relationship before the family steps down, they're actually not in a housing assistance payment contract with us. And owners believe that that is more litigious and has some additional requirements that they may not be interested in.
Oh, the housing choice voucher, you
right.
mean, would be, I see.
Currently, the owners don't actually engage with the housing authority. They speak with Abode Services primarily in First mm-hmm. Place for Youth.
So that's
the relationship they have. I think that areas that we can do better is maybe engaging those landlords with some of our landlord incentive mm-hmm. information and seeing if we can pull them over to our side.
Yeah.
And that is something that Mr. Johnson and I have talked about, trying to engage landlords with our incentives that might be on the program, the sponsor-based program. Participants have difficulty increasing their income enough to live independently. So someone may have TANF and then moving outside of the sponsor-based program, they're going to take on other costs, utility costs.
I see.
So other costs in terms of living independently, which may be difficult for them to do. The other challenge we've seen is that there's a need for another security deposit at entry and at step down. So they had a security deposit in the sponsor-based unit. And then they're stepping down to HCV. Now they may need an additional support in terms of security deposit assistance. And then the unit turn can be costly in terms of getting the unit that was used for sponsor-based turned for another sponsor-based family to come in.
Yes.
What I can say is that you know, we do expect to be able to serve families in 2020, but we think that there will be some challenges in meeting our goal of 125. We think we're going to land somewhere between 90 and 100 in terms of serving families, just because of the additional cost. So here are some of the expectations for fiscal year 20. Because the program has come to my department, I now have a dedicated team, an MTW Local Programs Building Bridges team, and that team will be dedicated to engaging the city and getting the families ready. And so it's a separate team from our normal eligibility team, and they'll work with all of our special programs and building bridges families. Again, we expect the utilization to be somewhere between 90 and 100. Up to 80 adults and possibly 20 youth. If the market softens, it is softening, I can see, that might assist in terms of some of the rents not being as high as they are in terms of getting new units on the program. And then we have in the additional $20,000 that we're asking you for to anticipate increases for housing subsidy. And this is a request for the remaining terms of the contract.
Yes, do you have a question?
No, go ahead, sir.
Go ahead.
You go first. You were ready to say it.
You have a question, you go.
Okay. It might be the same one, huh?
I have no idea.
Do we have an analysis of what it would take to make this program whole so that we can go up to 125?
We have looked at that. Mm-hmm. And depending on what's happening with the rents and trying to sustain security deposits and unit turn mm-hmm. Is difficult. And so, as you know, with some of our newer programs, the Housing Authority has shifted to paying subsidy, only because those other costs can be pretty exorbitant. So I would say we've looked at it, but it could be difficult to know what the top end would be. It's possible that it's $3 million, $2.6 million. It just depends on the housing cost and the cost for staffing, additional staffing, security deposits, unit turn for units that the families live in.
It's also a problem on the city side because we would expect commensurate investment into the social services, which brought us to this deal. and that would need to be guaranteed more than a year or two in advance. One of the advantages of the other programs under Building Bridges is that we have steady funding sources for the CalWORKs moms, for the emancipated foster youth. And looking toward that, I think, is economically better in that it costs us significantly more to have someone under sponsor-based than it does under those programs, and even the Section 8 program. And that's OHA. That doesn't take into account the services that the city's already paying for. So it is a very expensive program. And I do think a better solution, to the extent that we can do, we can open it up, is to keep it moving to the Section 8 program. In other words, anyone who's ready to move, so we can make sure this system doesn't get clogged.
Yeah, yeah.
And then as the years progress, what you do is look at, see what is reasonable, but it also has to be negotiated with the providers and with the city, who the city comes up with significant funds.
The matching funds.
For the supportive services that we don't do. And I really think, to the extent that we stay in our lane, which is housing assistance is the best use, because there's other pockets of money for the other services that should be coming to the table. When we started this program, it was a $1 for $1. We had about $1 million in services and $1 million in housing assistance. And as you look now, it's now a 2-to-1.
2-to-1.
Of course. Well, I'm interested in pursuing that conversation, to even advocating at the county level to perhaps have a conversation of what we could do about that. The other question is, do we have families on the waiting list that need to get into the program right now? And how many?
So
that could be something the city knows better than us.
So
because there has been a utilization
each
problem.
Month we talk about and actually look at each individual family and kind of where they are on the in the process.
Hi, my name is Maisha Stewart. Good evening, commissioners. Thank you for having us here. Right now, as of the end of May, which is the last set of numbers that I have, we are successfully paying rental subsidies for about 98 households. And we have stopped filling. We talk about OPRI in kind of two ways. OPRI Classic, which is the SB HAP program, and then we have OPRI Step Down. Which is kind of what we see as like graduation, because you've exhibited success in the SB HAP program and shown that you are ready to move to be moved over to the Housing Choice Voucher program. Because of our budget limitations at the very end of the fiscal year, we are not backfilling the classic, OPRI Classic right now. So we do have, I would say, probably 10 to 15 people that are slated to come in once we get the renewed funding for the new year. So yes, there are people that are on the waiting list for the program. And I also would just add, even though you didn't ask, OPRI is one of the city's most successful housing placement programs. We literally take the city's most vulnerable residents, unsheltered residents, and eventually, with the assistance of the Housing Authority and the collaboration with the other service providers, get them into permanent housing. And if they exhibit that they are successful within the SB HAP program, they can then obtain a Housing Choice voucher. There aren't many programs like that in the city. There aren't many programs like that in the county. So we appreciate the partnership with the Housing Authority.
Well, finally, I just want to appreciate the fact that we're stepping to meet a need, which is the second security deposit. I think that's smart. I think that's truly helpful to our families. So I completely applaud that. Thank you very much.
Yes.
How do you establish priority for who gets help first among the homeless, given there's so many homeless? Are there any priorities if an encampment is in danger of being removed? Or?
Well, most of the populations that we serve, so we serve various populations. We do serve encampments. We serve reentry folks or people who are who are at risk with coming in contact with the criminal justice system. As far as priority is concerned, our referrals do come from our service providers. They would be the most informed to make that decision over who has the highest level of need. As far as like a system or a lottery or anything like that, our clients are matched by the service providers.
Thank you.
No problem.
Yes.
Yes, I like the program Step Down. I've read it. It's very interesting. I have one question. With your project status, 96.5% of the households have been housed for 3 years or more, and then it says that 23 out of 40, 50% gain income within 12 months. Mm-hmm. With that income, do you track that? Was that sustainable?
Do we track the income? Who's
that also? They earn? The ones that the ones that have, you know, yeah, that before they came into the program, mm-hmm. they didn't have income. Now,
yes, we absolutely track income and how quickly our participants are gaining income, and that is a priority for us, is that they do gain some sort of income upon entering into the program. So we do track that.
Yeah. So I know it's with the housing market now, has it kind of helped, you know, because they get the vouchers, has it been sustainable enough to, if they move on their own, that they can, you know, make it?
I would say that my answer to that question would be our recidivism rates. You know, we have less than 25% of our clients that return to homelessness. And I would say that, yes, they are positive. They are staying positively employed. And the services don't end. They slack off slightly. It's not as intensive when you step down, but you are still receiving some level of service.
Okay. Thank you.
You had something, Marlene?
I just had a question and one comment. Okay, so bear with me. Anything that deals with homelessness is something that affects me because I was once homeless. And so I know the need and the importance in getting people housed. So my question, I know we need to have more housing, and I know, Director, you talked about getting the landlords more involved. How soon is that going to happen?
So, as you know, Commissioner Hurd, we've launched our landlord incentives. Mm-hmm. I think really for this group of landlords, it really requires us to partner with Abode in first place for youth, because those are the landlords they have relationships with.
Okay.
Some of those landlords are also have Section 8 families. Mm-hmm. We think there's a group of them that do have vouchers in their properties.
Okay.
So it's really just us getting together with Abode, in first place for youth, and putting on an informational session and inviting those landlords in to see what we can offer as a housing authority. So I would say that would be something we would do in the first, second quarter of this coming fiscal year 20.
Okay. In my comment, I read there. Mm-hmm. I was really excited in seeing that 134 households received housing subsidies,
mm-hmm.
the whole list. I mean, I was like, wow, we got to keep this going.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to get more landlords on board. So I applaud you for your efforts.
Thank you.
That's it for me.
Yeah, I just had a question about the, I noticed that year over year that the budget increment was $20,000. Last year it was $100,000. So is are the costs advancing now less rapidly than they were? I'm just curious as to the.
No, I think that what we're looking at is deciding on what other programs OHA is looking at subsidizing as well. I think the costs are going to always grow because the rents continue to go up.
Well, yeah, no. I mean, it was just that the increment was 1/5 of what it was last year. So I just was curious if what conclusion I might draw from that.
I really think just strategic ideal about where we're going. What we found is that the programs that we're building, that we've built, CalWORKS, First Place for Youth, the Building Bridges programs, have been very successful. Because OHA has decided that what it's going to focus on is what we do best, which is housing subsidy. And so mm-hmm. if you look at the contracts that we put in place over the last couple of years, that has been our focus. It's certainly easier for OHA to track that information and be responsible for the thing that we do well. So This is, again, one of our flagship, it really is our flagship program, but we have changed focus in terms of how we're building our local and building bridges programs. And so we're just being a little more strategic about our funding.
And to answer more directly, you were saying that 100,000 versus 20. So last year's increase was catching up with some delinquency in terms of the HAP payments to try and keep it whole and to try and keep us as close to 125.
I see.
And this year we are budgeting additional 20. It's really just HAP money. The service providers all wanted more money for many things that we don't really fund. I would tell you they turned in a request which was reaching for the moon, but really the moon needs to be paid for by the agencies receiving that type of funding. And some negotiation, if it were to be expanded, needs to be carried on with the city and our partners or even the county, someone who can come up with those resources. We don't want our housing assistance to get ahead of the support services.
Definitely.
But also we want to make sure that we have enough money for housing assistance to get them through the year. Yes. So that was sort of the debate within leased housing in their budget. And they also needed to and wanted to accommodate some of the other programs that we've come up with this year and make sure we balance it all. So we're in many pots in this year. You know, we're very engaged with the county now and trying to get people into that. We still have the SRO program that's come on board that we're housing people, and we've still unclogged Shelter Plus Care, which has been an important thing, and we are unclogged the OPRI families as well, to the extent that we can get the property owners and the participants to agree to go to the Section 8 program. It should be there for them. I do love that model, though. I think when you talk about any agency that's been able to put those pieces together anywhere in the country, you just don't find it. And I think we have had, and that's us, the partners in the city, have had a long run of real successful program. And if it's going to grow, it needs to grow as a collaborative and again, some additional resources. It can't just be OHA.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of what was kind of popping up in my mind, because from everything that I can tell, just from, you know, what I'm hearing, this sounds like a remarkably successful program. We have a remarkably large problem in this city with homelessness. So we have a program here that is a winner. I mean, it seems to be winning on a number of directions. I'm just sort of a simple-minded person. When something's working, do more of it, you know? And I'm wondering, I mean, I realize that we as OHA may not be in a position to really scale up with this thing, but if you look at this, it's kind of like a really successful pilot. I mean, there's other sources of money in the world that could come into this, and I'm just wondering if anyone is pushing on that and really looking for, because I mean, I've just noticed that some of the large tech companies, for example, have been putting money into funds for homelessness and stuff. I mean, I just have a feeling that there are maybe some other ways of skinning the money cat, so to speak, that we could scale this thing up. You know, like I would look at this and go, hey, we got 100 people in here. What happens if we do 1,000? Yeah. I mean, because now you're making a dent in stuff. It's just, it's successful. It's cool. And we should be like really.
It's a very successful program. And I do know that other folks in the city talk about a bunch of different parts of money.
Yeah.
The only cautionary tale about taking particularly any kind of grant funds that are coming from the private sector, they're usually one-time funds that will go away. And my question, if I were still here and that came before you, would be what happens in 2022 when the money's out?
There's no question it has to be done right.
But some of the great stuff that is going on, you have, of course, Kaiser Permanente with their 515, which I thought it should be 510 just because their area code, that we are actively discussing and working with. They're doing a great job on their own to help expand it. And I think anything we can come together with that we can have a significant role to play, we will. What I really would like to see us do is get through our current wait list, open up our Section 8 wait list, and have the people in the city and county that work in this area receive resources to help people get through the application process and then the eligibility process. Okay. And after that, make sure they have resources so they can stay housed. Okay. That, if you really want to have a profound impact on the number of people on the streets, I think are the things that need to occur.
Okay.
Cool.
Are we ready to move the item?
All right. The item has now been moved.
I'll second.
All those in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed?
Thank you for coming.
Yes, thank you.
Wait, let's finish voting here.
Thank you.
Okay, so did we vote? So, okay, good. We're all good then. We have no abstentions. We have no, okay. Carries
thank you.
As we knew it would. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So
Item C is consideration of a resolution authorizing the executive director to execute a contract with Office Depot Max Workplace Solutions for the purchase of furniture and installation at 1619 Harrison Street in an amount not to exceed $1,150,000. This is related to the place we're sitting that is undergoing a renovation, and I'll have William Bailey come on up. He's overseeing the project, our director of capital improvements. But we do have a brief slideshow, so I don't know if we're ready to go with that. Just so you can see what it's going to look like, the furniture bid is actually less than what we had budgeted. We are asking for some extra contingency on what the initial proposal was from the furniture aspect right now, because there may be changes for some of the offices as we get closer to the order date. And also, I just want to say for the record, to cover tariffs that will probably need to be paid and storage costs that will probably need to be paid, depending on the mood of this administration. And I'm not joking. And we had to figure it in because I didn't want to have an emergency meeting to try and get the furniture out of some hold. Do you want to talk about it, Mr. Bailey?
Good evening, Commissioners. William Bailey, Director of Capital Improvements.
Hello, Mr. Bailey.
How are you?
And make sure we talk right into it.
Okay. Good. Okay. As our director said, we have a brief slideshow that we'll go through. And as you can see, the first one is just a space plan of use where we all will be changed and reconfigured the whole first floor, where it was offices, all secluded. The wind, now you will have plenty of light. Staff will be able to see out, not be confined to restricted areas.
And the area, if you want to just jump back real quick to just, and I'll give an orientation on the drawing. In the upper right-hand side, you'll see a big room with lines through it. If you just do the back key down at the bottom of the arrow, it'll go back to it.
You know, this is not working.
Use the arrow keys at the bottom near the keyboard.
Yes. That's not working. Which one?
So in the upper right-hand corner, one more. Up, yeah. Is all that shaded area is what we're not touching. As you know, this room in the kitchen is not. What we did do and what you've seen going on is a complete removal of all the interior walls. So it's really an open work floor plan that we can ebb and flow based on what we are planning. And if you look walking in the front door, to the right is going to be CCGS, our contracting and compliance department, and to the left is going to be HR. And then going back to the left-hand side where you see the work areas, that's going to be finance on that floor. And moving on.
Sir. And on our second floor, as Eric's saying, the boardroom is currently where it is. We have open space. Next on the right, we'll have our COO. On the other side, we'll have our executive offices. Then going back, we'll have ORED and IT on the other side. Still, we'll have open spaces, the lunchroom. We'll have a business center in the very back going down towards the back there.
And a couple of the things that if you notice, the executive office is not changing at all, but we're going to put new carpet and ceiling in, but it's not changing. IT is not changing as well. We'll just make the carpet and ceiling match because the configurations are what they are and work. The large conference room on the second floor is getting, we'll have glass doors in the front and it'll be a lot lighter. We're also exposing up to the ceiling, so we're not going to have a drop ceiling in a lot of the areas, so you'll see the ductwork that's going in. It'll all be exposed in the wires. To the left of that, we'll have the chief operating officer, we'll have the Planning Implementation Compliance Department. Back in the corner is this, the space is all flexible, so we're currently determining whether to move ORED and Asset Management. They both can't fit where they currently are, but we may keep real estate development where they are at 1801 and then move some other folks from the field back in here. Asset Management, we want to move downtown. They're taking up community space in Peralta, and I'd like to get that back to community space. But we'll all in all facilitate a lot larger group of staff in this building, and really all of the administrative operations for the agency will be under one roof, which I think will be beneficial for us working.
And one of the big things also, all the executive cross will be new sound installation that would be the long awaited sound.
Yeah, we can hear everything that goes on in the street. It's pretty horrible. But they fixed that already. It's framed in. Like, my office was truly just exposed to the street except for one tin roof. So I couldn't figure out why I couldn't. I'd be on the phone and people would be talking in front of the office. I could hear everything they're saying, and so could people on a conference call. Okay. So we looked at it, and we did, you know, during the architect, we removed some of the ceiling, and you could see it just was kind of like right out to the street. They framed that in, insulated. It's now quieter than it's ever been. So it's been an interesting redo.
That's funny.
The data wires alone facilitated us vacating this building because they had only added and never subtracted any unused one, and we couldn't figure out what worked and didn't, and we had to get everything ripped out and start from scratch was the most economical and quickest way to do it, so we've done that. The data center in the back, if you notice, the space plan doesn't have storage around. There's only a few storage places in the building. We don't use paper anymore. We don't need large filing cabinet areas. We do, however, want to create a large office area, business system that has a large enough printer so we don't burn out all our smaller printers, like even when we're doing the board packet. So that will all be in the back second floor. People can send stuff electronically to be printed and bound by our copy center person that we've got on board already. And so it's going to be a little shift in the way we work. We're getting rid of the paper. It's going to be paperless. One thing about leased housing, if you don't know right now, is they scan in their mail when they get it. So we don't move paper like we used to.
They scan what?
Their mail in. So the mail they get scanned the day it gets here.
Oh,
it's
in the mail. Yeah. I
see. Okay. So these pictures, by the way, are computer generated images of the building when it's done. These aren't just stock photos.
Continuing on, just to
all of the work areas similar to our, and we modeled this after 1540. All the work areas are the same size, except for a couple exceptions where design didn't allow it, so that they can be very fluid about who sits there and who doesn't, and people don't argue someone has a bigger work area. Everyone's equitable here. The offices are all equitable here. There are a couple larger offices as well, but most of them are the same size, and the furniture's the same. And inside each work area, it's structured the same. So we should have minimized those criticisms. And we did also, if you look in the back, includes a lot of frosted plexiglass to, again, keep light going through the office space. And lifting the ceiling helps.
This next slide is the director's office. That we will put the same furniture design, the same design as 1540, as Eric stated. And this is our new conference room, the way that the design, the chairs, we tried to get them more ergonomic as well.
That's nice. So if you've been over to the second floor conference rooms at 1540, it looks very similar.
Mm-hmm.
This is our new second floor boardroom or conference room, where again, we're exposing up, we're changing the lights. You've got, you know, a lot of light coming in is the point. We're just trying to get more light into the building in general.
So those windows are not, they're new, right?
They're reframing, but they're the same size. What we're doing is lifting the ceiling and changing some lights so you get a little more. Yeah.
Okay. We did an evaluation of the type of chairs, talked to staff, and this is the final choice of the fabric and the type of chairs that we will be using.
And the orange is similar to the orange. It is the orange, basically, with different fabric that we use next door as the pop color. So we're doing the same thing here. There will be certain windows like at 1540 that have the orange, and then the color scheme is very consistent so that we kind of look like OHA.
Okay.
The rest of the furniture involves, you know, the waiting room on the second floor, the waiting room on the first floor, also some of the lighting fixtures in the conference rooms in larger area, so some of the electrical fixtures as well. And this is the waiting room next on the second floor outside.
Yeah.
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 And we are hanging plexiglass panels, not unlike that are at 1540 to cover up. Behind that is a fire extinguisher that code requires you have. And so the only way really to make the room work is to have that be a passageway, so we put some plexiglass in front of it. As you can see, there is one change in the drawing, and it has to do with the fire code. We originally wanted full glass in front of that conference room, but they won't let us do that, so we're instead putting glass doors and as much glass as the code will allow. This is the downstairs waiting area, and some of the items will be there. So the downstairs, if you notice, we'll have a counter. We will have our security there like we do at all of our office spaces that we'll greet, and then people could come by. There's the door that goes into HR because that's their most frequent, and then we have CCGS is that little door to the right, and they'll have their own as well ability to see people right off the street. They're probably the two largest foot traffic. People come here to see HR and CCGS more than any other department. So we wanted them right by the front. We have, if you haven't noticed, we have removed the planters on the second floor. And the other ones that are by the windows, I think, are scheduled to go out in the next week or two.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. It's not easy taking them out. It's noisy as all get out, too. But we did get the center one out. And we've done that really to open up the whole patio. And part of the design that the board had asked is, can we have doors right outside this? So when we do functions, we can go right outside. Those are going to be put in, so those will be doors right outside this
cool
boardroom, so you can go in and out. And we think it'll be a much more functional place to use because you won't have that center island, and we can have bring, you know, owner fair vendors we put in there, but you run out of space with all the planters. So we thought this would help. And lastly, I would say we had to water seal the whole thing because the planters had damaged the concrete. So it was an easy decision to say, can we just get rid of them and not have the same problem in 30 years?
So I shouldn't aggravate it by asking for a water element?
We
the opposite.
That would be really good.
Maybe a portable one.
Like a total well-being kind of situation.
The furniture person had to put some planters in there and wants us to do some, and we may have some planters in there, but right now our biggest concern, and one of the things that increased, if you remember the contract, is just getting this patio done so it doesn't damage the whole building.
Right.
And if you go to the parking garage, you can see where water was going through, and we're worried about
exactly
losing the rebar. And yeah.
No water.
But the order includes this exterior furniture, which should last a very long time and be useful. So that's our report. In terms of the status of construction beyond purchasing the furniture, we will put the order in, and then we have to wait, and it's timed for the construction. We expect the building to be finished by the end of the year, including the furniture. They're currently on schedule. We have uncovered most of the change orders. There is one that we are concerned about, which is the HVAC system, and this is just Mr. Bailey and I talking. But we have the rest, so we're not exceeding currently the contract that has been awarded by the board. But what I'm trying to do is get a final estimate, make sure we're all done, and take it to either July or August meeting before I leave so I can walk through the change order requests. But we may need some more money for some of the things we've uncovered. The largest one actually was we decided to get Century, the alarm people, to redo this, and they're operating under the contractor's agreement. And so that was about a $200,000 change order, which was about half of where we were. So we if they do something more with HVAC, which I would not, which I think is may happen, William does too, then we will come back. We may not need to, but we'll try and get that analysis done in the next month or so to see if we need any more authority. Right now, we're doing fine with the budget. We're doing fine with what we anticipated. We'd originally budgeted more than the contract award for the restoration, being pessimistic. And so I think we're doing okay. And we also never wanted to award a higher contract because we didn't want the contractor to really be aware that maybe we would be willing to do more change orders than we have. So coming back to you is actually part of the process, is what I would say. And at least I hope to do it if we're going to do it by August. And that should wrap the building. But anything else you want to say about the construction of the building?
Sir, that's it.
Okay.
Does this 1150 include the tariffs and the contingency you mentioned?
Yes, absolutely. And it's being generous on those, and it's me being nervous. In the memo, we put what the current bid is, and it will probably be that. and let's and everything's going well. But I don't feel comfortable.
Yeah.
So.
Well, very good, sir.
So when's this going to be ready to roll?
First of the year, sir.
Huh?
New build. Completion first of the year.
First of the year.
Yeah, we'll move in by the first
Happy
of the
New
year.
Happy New Year. Yes, sir. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Sure. And then I would just remind everyone that sometime later next year, we have the restoration of all the units above the office buildings following a disposition. And so, and this is no, this is the order in which it should occur in the best, you know, that we're doing. The OHA is paying for the renovations here. There will then be a condo divide that will probably be the third floor and up will be residential under a limited partnership. This and this could remain in OHA. But Dave and I have talked about variations on that deal, and there's many, and that will be from someone next year to determine which one makes the most sense for the deal. But at least we'll know that the OHA offices are completely restored in, you know, and we'll be done with that portion. Then we just have to finish and protect the rest of the units upstairs.
Most excellent. So do we have a motion on this?
I move approval of the resolution for purchase of furniture and installation for the amount of 1150.
Excellent.
I'll second that.
We have been seconded. All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Carries unanimously.
Thank you, Commissioners. Thank you, Mr. Bailey.
So we now roll on to item D.
Item D, I would like to have Dominican Henderson come up and talk a little bit about its consideration of a resolution authorizing the executive director to execute an intergovernmental memorandum of understanding with the Goldman School of Public Policy at the University of California, Berkeley, to complete the landlord research project for the Oakland Housing Authority. I'm very excited that she brought this forward, and I will turn it over to her to discuss a little bit.
Great. Good evening, Commissioners. The Planning, Implementation, and Compliance team, which is the team that I manage, presents today's exciting opportunity for a research partnership with UC Berkeley to better understand the Oakland landlord population and better identify ways that we can refine our MTW landlord incentives initiatives. And you heard a little bit about our questions that we have regarding landlord motivations in Michelle's presentation, so I hope to keep this pretty brief. But staff with this item proposes a partnership that would cover two research projects in conjunction with the Goldman School of Public Policy at UC Berkeley to answer questions regarding what motivates landlords to participate or, in contrast, what to not participate in the Housing Choice Voucher Program. If you have specific questions about the research proposals or the partner, our research partner in Goldman, Stephanie Hawk, our research associate, is available, and she's here in the audience and can come up and speak to the details of the studies. But these projects that we're proposing are in response to some of the challenges that we faced in the Housing Choice Voucher Program and some of our other programs that involve private landlords. Particularly in the areas of landlord recruitment and retention. Over the past 2 years, we lost approximately 1,500 landlords, about 13% of the number of landlords that participate in our main MTW voucher program. And so since the voucher program is the bulk of OHA's business, this negative landlord trend is really, it will negatively impact the entire agency because the Housing Choice Voucher is by and large the biggest program that we operate. So while the owner's incentives activities were launched in 2017, we still have not quite identified what the main driver is of the actual landlord behaviors in the program. So what we're trying to figure out is what the tipping point is for landlords to participate in the different types of landlords, what drives them to want to work with us, because you know you have may have a landlord that has one unit or two, that their needs and their what drives them is a lot different than some of the nonprofit partners that we work with that have project-based voucher units, for example. So we're really trying to use some data and some analytics to identify what the sweet spot is for the different types of landlords we have, understand better our landlord population in OHA, as well as in comparison to the broader Oakland community. So we hope to study various indicators such as where the landlords are, what the demographics are, the participation rates, et cetera. And we want to partner with UC Berkeley in order to enable their depth of knowledge and analysis that they offer. And you know, it's such a premier research institution, so we hope to gain a lot of analytical support from them. So we expect that the results of the initial research should be available for preliminary review, hopefully in September 2019. These results will be used to make recommendations for both the MTW annual plan that's published in February, usually around February. But it also will help us make some budget decisions, especially if the board will begin to have budget discussions around the wintertime in December or January, or a little earlier than in the past. What we hope to do is use the information that we learn from this research to help target different landlord incentives and fund those different MTW landlord incentives based on what the data is telling us. These studies will also be useful in setting future housing policy and serve as a baseline for some MTW strategies on a national level. The staff at the MTW office and HUD has been informed of some of the work that we're doing around landlord incentives, and they also have prioritized landlord incentives as one of the four cohorts that will get some additional study using the new MTW model. And so we hope to be able to provide some of the lessons that we learned from this research as a national example for
it's part of the expansion of 100.
Right.
The cohort number four is going to try and study landlord incentives. Having recently been at the NARO, the California NARO Pacific Southwest conference, we did do a workshop about MTW, but what the people attending were almost all from California, and almost all were most interested in this area because that's what everyone's challenged with here. So I do think we can help inform it, and so we've let the MTW office in DC know, and they're gonna they're looking to get PDNR, Pacific Planning Research and Design, or Design and Development and Research. And we'll have a conference call with them just to see if there's anything that they're thinking in the different cohorts that we can help inform through this, you know, looking at our program and what's working and surveying some of looking at our database. But it's an interesting idea.
Mm-hmm. And so I think the bottom line of all of this is that we have an intuitive understanding of what the circumstances are that lead to private landlords leaving the program or even maybe even have an intuitive understanding of what we think might drive landlords to come and participate in the program. However, we don't have substantial, solid, evidence-based recommendations just yet. And so what we're hoping this will give us an opportunity to do is really test our hypothesis to see if we what we think is right, and find out a little bit more about our landlords and apply some analytics and research to discover trends across the landlord pool that will help advise staff on and inform staff on how we should move forward with our MTW landlord incentives, and you know, be able to hopefully apply this knowledge to set some national policy. So it's really exciting for us to be able to move forward with this type of research. We have part of the goal of MTW is to study, is to test things, see what works, see what doesn't work, learn from it, and then see how we can scale it up to be a national, to influence national housing policy. And so this will really be an opportunity for us to be ahead of some other agencies. And, you know, in fact, HUD has done some, you know, minimal research on landlord incentives, but really it's a priority for HUD to understand what will increase landlord participation in the program. And so we hope that this will help inform some of those, their research that will happen in the future. So, like I said, Stephanie is here and can answer some questions if you have specific questions about the research project details, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have as well.
It'll be an interesting analysis. The only other kind of add-on, it will be an item that will come probably to August. We're proposing, as another MTW initiative, Planning Implementation and Compliance came forward with an idea of hiring a consultant that kind kind of the same people who do the rent surveys during to adjust the fair market rents, and using it to try and define neighborhoods that are that we can go down to the granular of a neighborhood to figure out what those rents are and are they higher than our fair market rents, and should we be making adjustments within a neighborhood that wouldn't require the landlord to come file. So they're working on that RFP to go out now, and then knowing what characteristics of landlords and what geographical areas that we look at in the data, certain incentives might work much better for a certain kind of unit in Oakland and property owner, whether it's a mom and pop versus a management company, and that we can use that as some of our marketing and targeting. And if there's some things that we learn that we could actually change the and add to or do new initiatives to kind of target even the small property owners, which I think is our market, that it needs deeper tapping, will come about not in small part because we'll have also the rent data based on an area we can define markets. The problem we have with smaller FMRs or fair market rents is that the smallest they go are census tracts and zip codes. And if you remember a few years ago, they proposed to mandate small area FMRs for Oakland. And we wrote, and I made maybe a few calls, because it just didn't work. Every one of our census tracts or zip codes included extremely affluent neighborhoods and extremely disenfranchised neighborhoods. And all you were going to do is force the vouchers. You're going to be overpaying for vouchers in the disenfranchised neighborhoods. So HUD actually looked at it. There was a report that I think Stephanie Hawk found that actually cited that they looked at my argument with their data and realized that it basically is the reality of it. So our proposal to HUD and what they approved is we can define our own neighborhood, our own markets. And if we think that rents are escalating around San Antonio Park right now and Section 8 vouchers are not keeping up and we have that data from this rent survey, then we can offer those owners a rent increase without them having to file. So that's the idea of trying to maintain and keep owners and protect tenants. Additionally, we will be able to, depending on what HUD issues, and we have a good idea what that's going to be, the fair market rent for 2020 will come out sometime in September.
Published in August and then effective October 1.
And so we're strongly considering, again, filing for the rent study, putting it on hold and getting this done. It'll be done sooner than it usually is. Hopefully we'll be able to get something to them in November. And if we'll know what our rent study comes back as, then we'll know that we really should submit it to HUD. We think we can do better, honestly, than what was done last year. It was contracted out. It was contracted out through the city of Alameda. We looked at what they did very strongly, and the number of Oakland families Oakland landlords that were surveyed, and we felt very uncomfortable with what was submitted. And so we want to try and take another pass. We want to include landlord incentives, so when they complete the survey, they get something at the end for taking their time. We think we can get a much better response rate than they did and get a much more accurate picture, not only at the granular level for the MTW initiative that this will help, this item will help dictate what could work, but also submitting an appeal to the fair market rents. If they only go up 1%, we're still 9% below what we were 2 years ago.
Yes.
Really interesting study, and hopefully it will really help. The results will really help us get more landlords. I was really struck by the statement. Currently, 8 of the 10 tracts losing the most landlords are contiguous to Mills College, and I'm wondering if, in looking at our landlords overall, are they spread fairly evenly or are they concentrated in certain areas? And I've noticed in looking at real estate prices that area has gone up in price a lot for home sales, and our landlords taking their units off the market and planning to sell them. So,
We have a presence in most census tracts in the city.
We need to. Could you just please, identify? Yeah.
Voice problems today. We're spread out throughout the city, but we're certainly more concentrated.
This is Stephanie Hawk from the Planning, Implementation, and Compliance Department.
I guess, sorry. Yeah. But yes, I agree. People are taking their units off and maybe putting them on the market. That's kind of part of this project, is trying to understand what happens to the units, why are they being taken off, and then what happens to them afterwards. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Yeah.
So this sounds wonderful. I'm really glad that we're doing it. I'm curious, I'm to understand that this hasn't been done before, like this kind of research?
Correct,
of this.
Yeah.
No, it really hasn't by anybody, which is sort of
shocking.
Astounding.
Yeah, yeah. So great.
But I would say
now.
That until we got into this real housing crisis a few years ago, utilization wasn't really a challenge. Usually it was driven by housing authorities that were not performing well, mm-hmm. not by landlords not accepting vouchers. But that's all changed.
Why is there no budget for this cool stuff?
Berkeley, our research partner, our proposed research partner, has agreed to do this for free, because I think that in addition to Berkeley being a premier, research institution, so we are excited to partner with them. I think we also have to see ourselves as providing some entree into an housing industry that has not had this level or this detail or this type of research performed. And so, we are a good partner too. And I think that the way that we came to even working with this group is through a kind of happenstance relationship that we have with one of the policy interns that we have that was working for us. And so it really is just kind of the perfect alignment of time and what our needs are. And I think that we have the ability to set national housing policy. We have access to HUD, which I think, is advantageous. And I think that at some point there may become a need for additional research that might call for, funding and things like that. But at this point, it's a study that the postdoc at Berkeley has some expertise in this area and is interested in partnering with us.
I see. So you are getting some doctoral level people in running.
Absolutely.
I mean, that was my next question.
Absolutely.
Was do you have a firsthand knowledge of who the people are that are going to be working on this?
Yes, and Stephanie has been working with Dr.
I probably won't know exactly who he is anyway.
And I'm not saying it right, and I apologize for that. Stephanie has been working with him on some other areas just to make sure that we are, as we're going through some of the other sort of policy initiatives that we're setting, that we are sanity checking it with some experts. So we do have, and in addition to that, the person that we're proposing to work with directly was the professor of the intern that we had working for us for the past 8 months. So we do have some developed relationship. We know.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, we're excited about working with him. And then also, I think that it will be that opportunity for us to be in partnership with the Goldman School to maybe have additional interns come from there, but also have other research projects as they come up.
This is a really good idea. It's just whenever you're working with these kinds of organizations, I mean, it's of high value to know some of the characters, the players, because then you get better outcomes.
Yes, we have had an ongoing relationship over the past several months.
Yeah, that's splendid.
And we hope to kick off this research and really do a preliminarily. Pretty soon. So this is,
So is it going to be like a phone interview kind of thing, pretty much? Is that what?
No, this will be a large-scale quantitative analysis looking back within our own records about who is participating and using really the data that we have.
Oh,
on
so
our
you'll
vendors.
Be doing correlations and things like that then, is that right? So
yeah,
so
it'll be some structural modeling and kind of hierarchical linear models using regressions and things like that.
Yes, mm-hmm. Right. I see.
Lots of numbers, less talking to people, more looking at how everything comes together.
See. So you're really looking at what correlates with what, more or less.
Sure, yeah.
Sort of, kind of.
Exactly. What predicts what? Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when we do the actual rent survey, rent study for the, the other initiative, that's when we actually need responses from landlords. Yeah. This one, we're mining our own data to figure out what we have, common characteristics of owners who want certain kind of incentives, and how we can match the incentives in the neighborhood and the owner.
Okay. Yeah, right. Okay, well, that sounds like, you know, this will be, I'll be very interested in seeing this. I actually, you'd be amazed how much of my statistics I still remember. I don't know why it got stuck in there so well. Well, thank you.
All right, we're ready.
Okay, I guess we're ready. We're happy to approve something with zero spending and awesome upside.
I'd like to move the item.
Because we don't need to actually. Yes, we do. We need to actually
authorize the MOU.
We need to actually formally do this.
Been moved.
I just did.
She just
moved. You just did a motion? Good. Now we have a second.
I second it.
Second. All in favor?
Thank you.
Aye. Thank you.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Excellent. Okay. So now we're going to go on to item E.
Item E is a report and update from the Board of Commissioners Recruitment Ad Hoc Committee on the recruitment and selection of a new executive director and related discussion. With the, on your table, you will see they all have the handout.
Yeah, I saw this. It's all in here. It's all perfect. So I don't know how we should really approach this, but we could. I thought, did you actually accept the position of chair? I mean, see, that was why we were kind of really ad hocking this, because you were a little cagey on being the chair.
I was a little concerned about how much time, but I'm happy to do that.
Oh, you are? Okay, yeah, splendid. So. All right, that makes me feel a lot more peaceful then. Okay, very good.
But our committee as a whole has worked very well together, and I guess our first task was to interview some recruitment firms.
Correct.
And have selected Gans & Gans Associates, who have done a lot of recruitment work for many housing authorities throughout the country. And we then met, and so I think we're excited about what they can bring to the process, and they will be talking with each of the commission members to get your thoughts about what your what you would like to see in the next executive director for our wonderful housing authority. So we also got together to put down some possible qualities that we will use to look for candidates and to make a decision on the final person. And wanted to get your input, get some ideas from you as to how important you feel each category is, and also see if there's anything missing here.
This was really us just trying to give the rest of the commission the benefit of our thinking and our get together, so that you have that, and then we just want really any whatever input you have, add things, question things, whatever. And now, do we have a time frame that we need some inputs by? Oh, I don't know if we really need inputs because they're going to call everybody on the committee.
Simone so Bearfield Gans will be calling.
Rolling on that, yes. Really.
And I want to thank Commissioner Castillo for putting this all in a very easy to read and understand framework for us.
And for actually volunteering to take on that task. Now, that was very cool.
Are there more?
Huh?
Are there more copies by any chance?
Yes.
You don't have a copy? Oh.
So when do we want this
back?
So when do we want this back?
Well, that's what I was just saying, that we don't
have a time.
Because the recruiter is going to call everybody on the board. So what the purpose of this is just to make sure everybody is thinking about what we want to help everyone be more prepared when the call is made. So I don't know that, I mean, unless we've, I don't know that it's really important that you submit anything to us. I mean, I don't know, what do you think?
It might be helpful if you had some needed ideas if you want to get them to us.
So if you'd like to share them directly with you and not with the whole board, number one, we don't want to create, that would be great.
If you'd like to,
yeah, good idea.
Okay. Back to me, and I will share it with the committee.
Good idea. Okay. Perfect.
Thank you.
Perfect. Perfect. Yes.
You can also use this if you want, in preparation for when you
or the call.
With
phone call. Okay.
So in that case, try and have them in by the end of the week to Lynette, right? Does that sound good? And then we'll.
There's also digital versions, so they have to type it and send it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we can, and Inez can email that out
yeah.
to you so everyone has it. Very good.
So we are rolling forward.
So we're rolling forward, and, you know, the ad hoc committee met 3 times in a couple weeks. They've been working very hard, and I'm grateful for that.
Thank
and
you.
If we can get through the next interview process and then get some product back from Simone, and she can open up the recruitment.
Yes.
I did send out a thing just to everyone that she just placed the New Orleans Housing Authority Executive Director.
Okay.
Yeah. They had 16 applicants that they vetted that were okay. They screened them down to about 10, and then they did interviews of the top 2 or 3. So I think that you have someone who has really been working this field and could have some interesting folks to bring forward.
If you have any questions or comments, happy to hear.
Yeah.
We love it, yeah.
And I think status-wise, they're working on the brochure right now, right?
I will touch base with her this week. We've sent her everything for the brochure.
So Eric sent them a, you know, here's who we are, here's who the city is type of overview.
Mm-hmm.
So they are now putting together a brochure so people will know what they're applying for. And that's where we are.
Very
yes,
good.
Yes, sir. We're there.
Yeah, we are. We're there. It's just really cool. We're rolling.
All right.
So if there are no more questions on that,
we're on consent.
And I've lost my page.
We are on item F, consent agenda.
Oh, yes.
And
okay,
just a
good.
Couple quick notes. One is F1 is actually purchase of 4 vehicles, and I want to point out 2 things. One is Enterprise is in the house, and just recognize that they're here. Through working for them to do the bands we're buying for, we're saving about $18,000, which I'm grateful for. The other thing is that we've received about $31,000 in the past year on insurance claims for some of these vehicles that are being replaced that were in accidents and aren't operable anymore. So that's mitigating it. I want to thank Artesia for those claims. I want to thank Mark for bringing them forward and saving us some money. It's the first time we're trying a Nissan van, so we'll let you know if we like it.
nice of you guys to come.
And then we have the other 2 annual items just showing where we have blanket purchase orders and where we spend our money, so it's a public record and people know.
Fleet management, cool. Yep.
If no questions, I'll make a motion to approve.
Excellent.
Great. No second.
And seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Abstentions? Carries unanimously. We now move on to item G. People address. Marlene, yes. Okay, so we're now going to move on to recognition of people wishing to address the commission.
We have 2 speakers.
I have 2 speaker cards here. So let's see. First one, and all speakers have 3 minutes. We have Deborah Ross.
First of all, I want to give honor to God, and I thank God for the spirit of wisdom and truth. I've been coming to y'all constantly into the issue that I have with Oakland Housing Authority. There was the unit building where we stay at It had a, it's a gated building. So the gate is off. That's allowing people to come in. And many a times, people had came to my unit. They caught one guy, and I've been going through a lot of stress and everything. I put in a claim through Oakland Housing Authority, and I had a guy to represent me. He knows a little about law and stuff. And so Eric and Dupree had decided, and Mark, that the attorney, Jeffrey, I forgot his name, Mrs. Bale, she decided they wanted to settle the case, and which we agreed about that. I have documents here. I would like the board to look at it. So it's supposed to have been settled to the amount that I had asked for the pain and suffering, because they allowed that gate to be open to it cost people to come in to try to rob me. I have pictures. I have a police report. And I also have, they had, one guy got arrested. So we had agreed to make a settlement. Mr. L. Johnson turned around, gave my whole file to the y'all insurance company, jeopardized the insurance company, and gave my information. Well, I had money orders in there. I had a son money order that I sent to him. They did a tracer on that as well. So I have documents here to show you information of all the emails that I talked with Eric Johnson, Mark, and also the risk management, asking them why they keep doing this. They've been harassing me, the staff, even when I make a report about anything that happened in the building, they delay in doing work order. I have came to y'all many times. I have wrote letters. I talked to city council. She told me, they told me, Mr. Tater, I mean, city council Tater told me to come back to the commission because this is what y'all for. I had settled with them. We had agreement. And then while for him to go and give my personal information, that's against my constitution, a private act of giving my information to a third party. You violate that. And I'm not refusing to keep harassing me. I am a child of God. I'm a person that do things decent and order, and I respect people. I never did anything to none of them. None of them, I have never cussed them out. I have been doing faithfully to keep my part, what I need to do. And also, I am asking the Department of Justice to do investigate it because they claim that I did owe them some money and the name of Jesus. I do not owe them the money. I have all my information, so I want to investigate because they cashed those money orders. The Oakland Housing Authority cashed those money orders and said that I didn't pay. My rent was current. I have all the proof, everything. But no one in here in Oakland Housing Authority has sit down to go to everything. I'm asking the commission again because I am writing some more letters out to my community. I have letters from people who's having problems. She's going to tell you in a minute what they've been doing to property, criminal activity. We don't have no gate there, and we constantly have people coming in. Commission, I am begging you in the name of Jesus. I came in here faithfully and asked. I don't cuss nobody out because I'm a child of God. But this has to be stopped. And I'm asking y'all to look at my documents, read this stuff, and solve it. I don't want to have to go out the box to talk to Cindy Diane Feinstein because I helped her in campaign. And I am going to get to her because I helped her. And I didn't want to do that.
I understand, Ms. Williams, your time's up. So
I know
it is.
But here, this is the documents. But I'm not going to give up. Y'all going to remember Deborah Ross. Believe me, in the name of Jesus. I'm not going to stop. Keep going until somebody's going to listen. Believe me. Okay, keep doing it like this. Can you get each one? It's all the documents, everything. And I'm keep on writing letters. And you still see some more emails. God bless you. Please don't keep harassing me either.
Okay, well, thank you. Next speaker is Trina Burton?
Trina Burton.
Trina Burton, yes, good. Good evening.
Good evening. Just got some good news. I don't want to give you guys this bad news, but I'll give it to you first. So anyway, good evening to the commission. My name is Trina Burton. I reside at 1905 Seminary, Apartment 5. I had a lot of problems there for like 4 or 5 years. So they finally got rid of the person that was giving me the issues. I went to court. I lost my job in the course of going back and forth to court for this particular tenant. I came here in May. I think I lost my job I came here April. I lost my job in May due to the fact I was going back and forth to court, and I was taking care of an elderly lady, and she needed my full attention, and I wasn't able to give her that at that particular time because I had to deal with my family and make sure my family was okay. So I took that and swallowed that with a pill, and that's okay. But my car got vandalized. I just got a new car. Prior to me getting fired, I got a brand new car. By the grace of God, I got it. It was 90 days before I made the first payment. So, you know, my mind is clicking now. 90 days, you got it. But 90 days can get you on your feet real quick when you have to do what you have to do. So a guy in the back of the building, he vandalized my car. He's a friend of number two's, the tenant that used to live in number two. And I went to court for her, I think May 1st or May 5th or whatever. The next day, they didn't honor me, my restraining order. She has attacked my son on the property. She has attacked my children. She has harassed me, constantly lied on me, called the police, etc. So like I said, they got rid of her, finally. Her friend scratched my brand new car, keyed my car. So I made a police report yesterday pertaining to that. It's just the safety issue. I don't even think it's coming from outside, from on my end. It's always, for me, it's the inside coming after me for some particular reason. And these are addicts coming after me. Like, you know, they're either mad because my drive is, you know, I'm not sitting around doing anything. They're just watching my movement. If they move like I do, they can get the same thing. But it's just uncomfortable to live somewhere where I can't feel safe, you know. And that's my only concern, is safety, because my kids and me have got attacked on the property. So that's my only concern. Outside of housing, I'm appreciative for having housing. I'm appreciative for my children having somewhere to go. And so with that being said, I just wanted to just stress that point. But as of today, I just got a call from Mr. Butler, which is Nancy O'Malley's colleague. So I'll be working for La Familia in another 3 weeks. And I'll be going into the jails, and I'll be doing the things I need to do. But it's just a hindrance sometimes when you're trying to do things that's righteous and you keep getting attacked. By tenants, like, I'm like, what's going on? So that's where I'm at with it. And I just want, you know, people, the police officers, just to be aware of what's going on. They were pretty friendly when they came out to talk to me, and I wrote the report. I mean, they got a report, but I haven't got it yet because it was just made on Saturday, I believe, Friday or Saturday. So that's basically all I've got to say. Just kind of protect the people that are trying to do something. I feel like they're protecting, like the landlords are protecting the people that are harassing and not protecting the people that are doing righteous. And that's where I'm at with it. Like, you know, like Ms. Pate, she was there for almost a year. I know it's my time is up, but yeah, just protect the people that's trying to do something. Like, I came out of the moms program, I excelled. I kept on going to the top, and I'm not done yet. And so working with La Familia soon, I'll be able to do something different for the community and give back and give jobs for those who's harassing me. You know, I just want to be at peace. That's it, you know, and that's all. And you guys have a good evening.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, so.
Okay, I thank you very much for making us aware of that. Okay, so we now are moving to written communications.
Written communications. Included in your packet are two monthly reports. And just on reflection, I'm very proud of our monthly reports because I read other agencies and they don't do it. And we burden all the staff to put them together, and it helps me stay way informed and definitely worth reading. And we're here for any questions. A couple of the other things, though, in written communications are, first, you'll see a letter from NARO, where you'll find out we had two Award of Merits. And not only that, we have two nominations for Award of Excellence, which is the national award, which is highly competitive, and I'm very excited. I'm particularly excited because they don't involve development. We have won two awards in the same year, but it was development, and this involves administration. And so I want to just congratulate all the staff working on our owner incentive program, which you've heard, and the work that's gone into that is kind of incredible. And then we have the OHA anti-bullying campaign as well that has been nominated. We'll know if we won. It won't be the Boston trip coming up. It'll be the fall one, and I can't remember where it is. San Antonio in October. And that just because I was putting the packet together and I was particularly struck by an LA Times article, and I don't know if you've been following the conversation about homelessness in LA, yes. Mm-hmm. But it's defining where this country is going to go, in my humbled opinion. Last year, the county of LA and the city of LA spent $600 million to address homelessness. They maintain that they rehoused about 20,000 people, mm-hmm. when some of my colleagues in that city, who, not my colleagues at housing authorities, I might add, yes. some of my old stomping ground friends who do this work, are really asking the question of where are those families now?
Yes.
And it seems one of the, and they will get to the bottom of that, but it gets into recidivism. And when you heard even the OPRI program, even though it's enormously expensive, and I really think that we should expand it, but I'm not going to expand it unless there's real dollars from other agencies coming forward. The OPRI sponsor-based program.
Yeah.
It does work. What they did was throw an awful lot of money at the problem, and they didn't necessarily have the outcome and long-term outcome that I think that the world would like for the folks, for our unsheltered neighbors. But I thought this was a particularly insightful short piece about what people think about homeless versus what the reality is. And I just wanted you to have it so you could share it with whoever you wanted. And that's all my written materials.
Thank you.
In terms of the next one, which is, and we are available for any questions on that, if you guys have any on the report. The next item is just my report, and I have a few notes.
Any questions? Well, I have one, just to prove to you that I'm actually reading this stuff. No, but I noticed that for rent increase requests, there were something on the order of 600 and change of them, or some along that line, and 100 of them were rejected, which is about 15%. So I was just wondering, in light of all this other stuff that we're doing on landlord incentives and all that, I was just curious if there was any known correlation between the requests that are rejected and people dropping out of the program or getting negative on the program, or if that's really not an issue. I'm just curious.
Well, sometimes it is and sometimes it's not. The owners submit a rent increase request of us. Sometimes it doesn't pan out. Sometimes
sure.
those are project-based Section 8s, so you're getting 100 units by one owner. And I'd have to have Michelle answer
Of that. I see what you mean. So
in other words, we get a request.
It could be deceptive, right.
From next door that they want to raise the rents to this level.
Right, right.
And we say, no, that's not enough.
Yeah, I see.
So you get 100 units in one pop. Do you want to maybe add to any of that with the...
Yeah, it's really just mostly curiosity as to whether you've noticed something there, because I'm sure you've looked at that.
They had 408 rent increase requests, and there were 184 for the housing choice vouchers, 93 project-based, so nearly 100. The average rate was 12% and 194, so that was the most recent month in May.
Michelle Assan, Director of Leased Housing. So what I can say, Chair Hardwig, is that owners actually are just not completing the documents correctly. That's really what's happening.
See,
and
that's why we ask these questions.
Or they're requesting rent increases and they haven't finished the first year of their lease. Or they're including Section 8 units as comparable units, which are not allowed under the program.
Section 8 units?
You can't use a Section 8 unit as a comparable unit for a rent increase.
I see, right.
So, because if there's a way for us to provide a rent increase for a landlord, we are doing it.
Well, I knew that. Yeah right. That was why
but
I
as usually curious. The paperwork's not completed properly, the comps aren't correct, or they're not in the second year after the first year
I
in terms
see.
Of
You know, I was just looking at April because you got to wait for the full month. May, they still have HQS pending, so it skews the number.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you go back to April and you see rent increases requested, we're 710. That's a high number. We're back to being high.
Yeah,
I see.
That was the number, right?
The rent approved that month are 635, right. Which is basically 89%. So there's
exactly,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. That's why I said it was about 100 that were rejected, and most of them were right. accepted. But I was just. You know, I was just curious, and now we have a spectacular answer. I now have much better
But I would say the rent increase process, the reason we want the MTW initiative, it's onerous.
Yes. Yeah.
On the owners.
Yes.
It's too burdensome. And what we really want to do is have our system naturally keep pace with what is a fair market rent so that they don't have to file, get comps,
yeah, see, and
go
back
and forth.
And that is probably going to be a much bigger problem for small landlords.
Yes.
Because I think of myself, since I'm like the smallest landlord, and you can't get smaller than I am, really, and be a landlord. And so admin issues are big. Yeah, well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Oh, yes.
to me.
So I really appreciate the monthly reports, and it's really great to see how many folks are getting hired and continuing in the work. I was wondering, because I do see these names for those who have their own businesses. Are we tracking that all of these businesses are continuing year to year?
Lanita just answered yes.
15, or maybe I should put on my glasses. Page 15.
Evening. Lanita Wheeler, Director of Family Community Partnerships. Yes, so for our annually, we do reconfirm if businesses are still active. And then throughout the year, oftentimes many of these businesses come from family self-sufficiency. Uh-huh. It's part of one of their goals that they want to be their own business owner. And so then we're notified at the time that they have their graduation packet. And so throughout the year, we may add individuals, but we do annually confirm that the businesses are still existing. And then we also support them with maintaining their operations. So some of them still need help with, you know, like understanding insurance and how they would partner with, say, even us, if it's a business that we would even participate with them with a vendor, like if they're a caterer or something of that nature, how they would be able to become a vendor with us to do that.
Well, that's really wonderful, because I used to work with some small businesses, and I just know how hard it is for them to continue on. So really appreciate your continuing help with them. I also have a question on page 13, and this is under SRO operating assistance. There's, and maybe it's back to Michelle. Sorry. Thank you, Lanita. There's a under SRO operating assistance, it was 61%, and is that because some units are still being rehabbed?
Commissioner Michelle Hassan, actually it's because the second largest property, the Henry Robinson, is not online.
Okay.
And so it's 62 units out of the 289. The first one,
and we are doing no assistance to the second, although we have discussed with the city, but they haven't been able to get the first one through HQS. So if I seem a little reluctant, it's a series of things that need to occur.
And they're planning a third.
And the third, I totally support, but can we get the first one under?
So it's primarily due to that property not being on. That is kind of that the percentage is lower.
I see. Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask one more question? It might be yours. Under the CALFA talking
points? Oh, the CALFA talking points, yeah.
And I've heard that there are maybe some changes from HUD. Is there still a lot of back and forth or...
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the...
This is the CLOPA talking point. Yeah.
Rural talking points is, I'm just curious as to what you think may be coming down from HUD on this.
You know, there's a lot of real activism around two issues that the secretary has been purporting. The one on the talking points, it was just information people ask you kind of where we are with this. I've been asked by a couple of reporters about us. We do not have a hugely impacted number of individuals or families, just over 50 individuals. So we're not a very good poster child to objecting to this, although we are preparing an opinion letter to the proposed rule like we usually do with things that think will damage our residents. I would tell you that the city of Los Angeles is decimated, and I've had conversations with their executive director, and I've actually tried to get some of our press to talk to them to get an idea of scale, because when they hear that we have 54 and they hear Santa Clara has about the same, nobody understands the scale to the families who are impacted, but also just the number. What I understand in Los Angeles, I think it's about 11,000 individuals.
Yes. What?
11,000 individuals, and something like 60% of the public housing households have one person who is not documented. And they are putting together coalitions and working, and I've talked to their executive director, and he's and we communicate on a lot of things, but this is one of, I think, that he is one of the great strong voices. They have been working with all the electeds and all of California's elected officials. They're trying to, there's been organizations most recently, I think it is Low-Income Housing Coalition is doing a day. I could forward you their email. I got it this morning about where people can do things around it. Okay. It's truly appalling and unnecessary, and I'd remind everyone that no federal dollars are assisting that individual, nor have they in the 25 years that they have been participating in the program, and that it costs us money as taxpayers, which is one of their last bullets, which I would have rather was higher, because if you have a family of five, and you say you have one, and grandma has come, and she's waiting, she's not documented yet, in the system, which can go on forever. So you have one person who is not here with documentation. We end up prorating the assistance so that that 20% comes off. So by saying this person can't be assisted, and they move grandma out of the unit to preserve the housing, then actually it's costing the Oakland Housing Authority 20% more to house the family. So not only is it just truly, I think, a racially divisive action, it also costs the taxpayer more. And finally, if my sources are correct, this came directly from the White House and was not crafted within HUD.
Okay. Yes, that definitely makes sense.
So hearing that, it sounds like it's especially targeted to undocumented.
Yeah, it absolutely is, yeah.
And are we signers on in opposition or?
No, we opine on the rule, and Dominica's been working on the letter along with reading everything else, and we participate in some calls with both CLAFA and NARO on this, and we get draft comments. I would also say we have a really good friend in the state attorney general who has helped us and reached out to me. I put him in touch with both Preston Prince at Fresno and Los Angeles directly, and they've written some really effective letters in the past. And I just met him one night at a meeting in Oakland a year or two ago, and he's stayed in touch and has sent us their responses. Which, even when they issued their last, I can't remember what it was that they issued their response to. He sent it, and I sent it off to CLAFA because they used some of their comments, and it was probably the most legally articulate letter that HUD's ever received.
Wow.
I was really blown away by it. And so from what I hear, so was the building, and it did go forward. But it's just a challenge. And the staff does, we do comment letters. Oftentimes I'll include them once we do it. The date, I think, is July 9th. So we don't have anything, we won't have anything done, honestly, until July 9th. We won't, because we keep tweaking until the last minute and you submit it electronically. But I'd be happy to include that letter and one other that we're crafting in next month's board packet so you can read our arguments.
Thank you.
Perfect. Beautiful.
Anything else?
Okay, so are we ready now for a motion to go to a closed session?
No, we have reports from commissioners.
Oh, right. Yeah, where am I going?
We sort of gave it. We kind of did our report. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we did our report, right.
Were there others?
I don't know. Do we have any other? Did we have any other committees meeting this month?
No.
We apparently did not. So therefore, we do have announcements by commissioners.
So I do ask, did any other?
No one else has announcements, no.
Okay, I did have something to say on this, but I can just email it to her.
Oh, so did you?
I can just email it to her.
Oh, okay.
I did have something to say on that. Okay, so bear with me. So I'm going to just mention some of my announcements. Both Lynette and I, we did a tour of the Tatsumarahunkin Village.
And is the staff person here that gave us that to Emily?
No.
She's like, okay. So pretty much, I just want to say thank you. I hadn't really visited it, but do you agree after seeing it? And see how beautiful it is and everything we're doing here? I'm like, oh my goodness, we got to do more of that. So I applaud the staff who gave us that tour, and I learned a lot that day. And my second announcement, Tassaranga, we have our meeting tomorrow, and that's going to be teleconference, so we'll be on the line, you know, discussing more about the Tassaranga work. Okay, the other thing I want to say, just bear with me. When we talk about the homeless issue, as you know, someone who was once homeless, now I'm a housing commissioner, and always advocating for the homeless community. And Michelle, thank you. Director Johnson, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, staff, for helping more of the homeless. So I want to make the announcement. This Friday at the East Bay Church of Religious Science, they're having their Tent City showing of that film. It's going to show all the tent cities, people that are homeless, okay, in Oakland. And that's going to be this Friday. It starts at 7 p.m. And if you can go, please go. But, you know, coming as staff was bringing me back from the tour, you went by the tent city. And, you know, I still get emotional when I see them. And when I wake up in my apartment in the morning, every morning, I look out my window at we have a park there. And there are tents there. And I wake up every morning seeing them. So I don't forget them. So when we have items to be voted on about that, you know, it's a no-brainer for me. I mean, I didn't live in a tent, but I lived in my car. Okay? But so again, the homeless thing is something I'm a strong advocate about, but I thank the staff who know what that message is all about. Okay, a couple more things. Now, I know we haven't had any meetings as it relates to the Education Committee. I don't know when we're going to be having one. Do you know, Director Johnson?
Which committee?
The Education Committee.
Yeah, we haven't scheduled anything yet. No.
Okay, so I want to mention, on Saturday, I attended the Juneteenth celebration, and I had my own table out there, not representing housing, but representing the work that I'm passionate about. And one of the vendors came by for the Oakland Unite, and they're going to be doing five Fridays. The City of Oakland Human Services Department, Oakland Unite, they're going to be doing five Fridays at the Hoover Elementary School. And I don't know if that's something that we partake in, you know, in elementary schools, but it's five Fridays. And it's just, you know, getting out there, sharing information, and connecting. And it gave me this, and I just wanted to make sure I mentioned that, because, again, education is important, and if we're not in the community getting it and giving it, how are people going to get it? Okay? So
what
that's something.
Dates? What
are
the dates?
Okay, so the five Fridays, the first one is this Friday, 6/28. The other one is July 5th, July 12th, July 19th, and July 26th. And there's going to be food, with pony rides, art, craft, games, prizes. And Annette Miller is the point of contact for the City of Oakland Human Services Department, Oakland Unite. So again, I was really excited to get this. And let's see what else. Okay. One more thing. I'm sorry. I got a lot here, but just one more thing. Because when I sit in this chair, staff, when I sit in this chair, I don't just sit in the chair. I sit in the chair, then I go out there, and I see the tent cities. I go out there, and I see those youth who are vaping. I go out there, and I see our grandma sitting in tents. I go up there, and then I come back here. And when we have these items to vote on, I remember what I see out there, and I bring it back here so you all are aware of it. So today, I attended Alameda County. One of the things that I've been an advocate about is vaping era and tobacco prevention and all that kind of stuff. Alameda County Behavioral Health, they did vaping nicotine. How safe is it for our communities? And this was held at the Oakland Museum, and I brought you guys these back, but even though I've gotten a lot of education on this, I've gotten certified in the training, be a facilitator, and I thought I knew it all. But I learned so much more today about what our youth are doing with this vaping. Oh my God, I was just scared. Going in the bathroom, doing it, not going to class. They decide to stay home and vape because their parents aren't there that day. And they can vape at home. I'm like, oh my God, how do we get the resident advisory board knowing about this? And I know I have not been to a lot of our resident meetings, but I'm going to be going back because there's so much that our residents can be a part of. Not saying they got to vote on legislative meetings, but just knowing about information. And one of the panels that spoke today were youth, and they were talking to us about what they see on their campuses with this vape era. So I have one of these for you guys. And wow, it's just I don't know, just get emotional. But the vaping thing is serious, and we really need our youth knowing more about it. And they may already know about it, but we need our youth knowing more about it and what it's doing to them in their brain, their heart, their lungs, and even dying. So just want to let you know I'm doing a lot, but it's all good work. But I never forget my journey out there, homeless. I never forget my journey walking out there, seeing the tent cities. I never forget that. So I don't know how long I'll be sitting in this chair, being the vice chair, but as long as I'm sitting here, know this staff, I'm going to still be out there doing what I need to do to raise the voice of my community. And who is my community? You are. Our residents are our youth. And I don't want our youth vaping in the bathroom and teachers not knowing what they're doing. Okay, no. So what can I do as a resident commissioner? Can I educate our residents? Can I educate their parents? Can I educate our youth? Please help me. Help me know legally what I can do. But I'm going to still be going out there till I die so I can bring the message to those out there. We need your help, Lynette. Ms. Montgomery, we need your help. Chair, Lynette, all y'all, we need your help. Remember, it takes a village to raise our community. And I'm still going to be going out there helping to be the voice to help raise it. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm done. And I have these, but this presentation that we got today, we had some dynamic speakers. And oh my God, the information I got is like, I got to take this back to Oakland Housing Authority. Director, give him one, please. Here's one. Here, take it, but it's please look at it. This vaping thing is serious. And our youth are being affected.
Thank you.
And the parents need to know about it too. Thank you, everyone. I'm sorry, but thank you for hearing me. Thank you, Lynette, for what you're doing. I didn't get to comment on my report from the Family Community Partnerships on what you're doing there, but I'll send you an email on it. But when I read this, I know whoever creates this report, it takes time to do it. But when I read it, I'm appalled at what's happening with Section 3. I'm appalled at what's happening with Community Development Department. And just today, as I read this reading, we had, let's see what it said here. We had 23 that signed up for the Job Plus program. Was that the number? And today, oh God, help me. Where did I read that at? But I was reading about the Job Plus program and what's happening there, and just everything that we're doing to help. So I close by saying this. I thank staff today. He came in there and I thanked him. I just wanted to say thank you, because when I go out there, people see me as commissioner, but then when I go out there and see him on the bus or see him out walking, then they see me as a resident. My commissioner hat comes off,
and my resident hat comes on, and I say, I'm your voice. Don't be afraid to speak. I'm your voice. I'm your voice. Okay, so thank you, thank you, thank you. God bless you all, but thank you for your work you do. Because our resident, oh my God, this vaping thing is serious. How safe is it for our communities? You need to know how safe it is. It ain't. Thank you. Did you all get one?
Yes. Okay.
We did.
Thank you very much. Please, please check it out. Check it out. Check it out. Director, check that out. And let me know what I can do to bring this message to our resident advisory board. Thank you. Ms. Wright, you want one? Ms. Wright, you want one? Here, ma'am. Can we give her a one?
Of course.
Okay, so, thank you, thank you, thank you, and thank you. And Chief, thank you for your message that you gave me today. Sometimes I need to hear that. Sometimes I don't think I'm doing good. Sometimes I think I'm in the doghouse, or people ain't liking me because I didn't do this or that. But when I heard what you told me today, Chief, God knew I needed to hear that. Commissioner, I know you're doing a lot. Slow down, but don't stop. That's what you told me, right, Chief? Chief? That's what you told me, right? Don't stop. Okay, I'm not stopping. Ain't no stopping me now. I'm on the move. But I'm going to slow down and do what I need to get done. All right, boy, this is serious. And know about it. Thank you, Director. Thank you, staff.
Okay, I think we are now prepared to
motion
for closed session. Let me just say that I have an extra one of these hard copies of the executive.
Did you get one of these, Ms. Wright?
One too. Missing it.
Did you get one, Ms. Wright?
Everybody, you all got them? All right, we're good. Okay. All right. Yeah, well, I was just sitting here. I don't know. Okay, so we have a motion for a closed session? Okay.
You got one?
We're moved, seconded. Request for 5-minute bathroom break. Yes, we have it. We're good.